That's us. Hi, hello. It's John Young here. I'm sitting with Tom Sorby. We're at Tom's home in Larkhall. And the date is the 12th of March, 2012. And Tom, would you just confirm your name and where you live now, and we can maybe.
My name is Tom Sorby. I live in High Pleasance in Larkhall. I've been here for 40 odd years, but still have the memories of Stonehouse.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's why we're here.
I was born in 1935.
Great.
So Argyle Street, Stonehouse.
In Argyle Street, and is the house still there today?
Yes, it is still there. Right, okay. Four in the block, opposite the picture house.
Great stuff. So Tom, obviously we're here to talk about Stonehouse. As a young boy, what are your earliest memories of Stonehouse, living in the village?
My earliest memories is going to school and putting the teacher saying, right lads, let children get the gas mask on. And we all carried a gas mask in a box. And I can still to this day remember the smell of the rubber and the teacher telling us to get it on. Because when I went to school, it was wartime, it was 1940. Yeah. So that's the earliest I can recall of Stonehouse. But I can remember some things like, for instance, the old school in Hill Road, going on fire. Now, I must have just been, just prior to going to school or anything, am I right in saying it burned down 1937?
It was November 36, but you're very close there, you're obviously.
And I can still remember standing, and we had visitors in, right. And we were upstairs in the house, uh-huh. And I can still remember them, somebody saying, they feel the heat of the glass, right uh-huh. off the fire. And it's still clear in my mind, and I must have been quite young then.
Right,
yeah. That's about the earliest thing I remember.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And which school was it you went to? Was it Carmarthen Street or Townhead Street?
I went to all three.
Right, okay.
I went to primary school up in, Stonehouse Junior Secondary.
Right.
I also went to Greenside, which was woodwork and housewifery, it was called then. It's home economics now. Uh-huh. I also went to Carmarthen Street, which was a two-story building, and I was quite surprised to see the photographs that it was a one-story, uh-huh. So it must have been demolished and a two-story.
Do you remember some of your early teachers there?
I can remember the teacher. I think her name was it McClatchy or something like that. I can remember that. I remember all the wee, the teachers all had the wire glasses on and things like that. They weren't what they were like now.
So what were the subjects like at school, and what did you play at playtime?
Well, I think chasing about. I know that the girls played beaver and things like that, but I'm not so sure what we played in the playground. Just running about, as all wee boys and girls do.
So what did you do as a child when you were out with school? Where did you play?
Mainly down the Avon, down into the park. Because I lived in Argyle Street, the park was handy.
Uh-huh.
So I went away down into the park, and we were in the swings, and constantly on the swings, and down into the Avon, and we hung about. And as I told you, John, used to snib birdies, which was quite an interesting thing.
Uh-huh.
And it's in your book about peeling back a root, making a wee lasso, sitting on top of a rock and hammering the stone, and the birdies come out, and we just lassoed them and brought them out of the water. It was great fun. A wee bit of swimming. I didn't do a lot of swimming, but the monkey puzzle tree. There was a monkey puzzle tree down in the park.
Uh-huh.
We played in that. The chute, of course.
Yes.
What we did in the chute was there were mats, and we used to go down with candle grease down.
Uh-huh.
As we went down, we were pulled candle grease at the back, it made it slippier, right? And it went faster, right? So right off, and on a Sunday, on a Saturday, we used to get a lot of trips in the summertime,
right?
Coming out for Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
And because we'd made it slippy, they didn't know, and when they got the mats, and they would go flying off the end, there was a hut, and they used to
hit
the hut to the other side.
That's for the boats, right.
So that was a good lot of our pastime.
Right.
I also went to some of the farms and helped the farmers and played in the haystacks and things, particularly the one down at Lintock, opposite the park, and Will Reed's.
Right, at the home.
Was in, home by, lifting potatoes in there.
Right.
And the Muirs, that was Lintock.
Right. So you were lifting potatoes, is it, were you working there?
No, it was just a boy, but later on, later on during the war, or near the end of the war, because there were so many men away in the army or the navy, in the forces, the boys, like the 12, 13, they asked them if they'd come out to Tattyhawken.
Right.
So we used to go to Tattyhawken. And it was, and hail, rain, or shine, you still had to pick the potatoes up. And it was horses that pulled the lift, potato lifter. And if it was wet, we turned a bag outside in, like a hood. And we worked with that in the fields.
But
it was interesting, you know, it was just, what are the staff wee boys?
That's fantastic. What are some of the events when you were younger that you remember as a boy in the village?
Well, when I was at school, I think it was 1949. I've got a badge through there on it. It was the Queen of the Roses.
Oh, yeah. That's Charlie, Tom's dog.
Crown and Queen of the Roses. And I was a page boy. I think that was the second one.
Yeah, I think 1948
was the first one. I think that was 1949. I'm sure it was.
Yes, right. It was.
And it was Mrs. Brodie that crowned the Queen of the Roses.
The councillor's wife.
That's right. And at that particular time, I had to wear tights.
Right.
And the tights that they'd hired with holes in them. So she insisted that I went away up to her house. So I got a chauffeur-driven vehicle to take me up to her house. She got her stockings and her garters, and she says, "That'll do you, son." So there we had women's stockings. I wasn't very pleased.
I'm
can
not
tell
so
you.
Sure that would get in well nowadays.
my garter on it. But I remember that. I can remember I think it was VJ Day, and they had a bonfire. The whole village was at the cross,
right.
And there was an air raid shelter in the middle of the cross, right?
Whereabouts at the cross was the air raid shelter? Do you remember where the entrance was?
I could actually sketch it out to you. I was trying to sketch it one day for your information. I'll maybe finish it.
That'd be interesting.
It was just where, you remember the bus stop?
Yes.
It was just where the bus stop is.
Right.
The front of it was just in line with the shop.
Okay.
The Hamilton's shop, is it Hamilton's shop? Just in there, and it was, they had baffles on it, for blast.
Right.
And it was built with double thickness of brick.
Okay.
With reinforcing wire down through it, so that the whole thing moved if there was a blast.
And how many people do you think could get into the shelter?
Well, I couldn't tell you that. I would guess maybe a couple of hundred.
Yeah,
well, we're squeezed. They said they were all just standing there, but it was wasn't very.
And was it ever used?
No, it was never used. We played in it. There was another one up on Hill Road,
right?
And it was in where that old school was.
Yes.
And it was just in off the road, off Hill Road.
Right.
So that was two that I can't remember the other ones, but I can certainly remember that. But they built a bonfire on it, and I think VJ Day, and the flames were so high that the wires that went across for the lighting poles, they burnt and the cables come down onto the road, and they were jumping about and sparking, and everybody scattered. You know, obviously there were power in it, right?
Yeah.
So that was one thing I remember about.
So what other memories do you have of the warriors in Stonehouse?
Can recall the ARP going out with what do you call these stirrup pumps and buckets and putting out what was supposed to be incendiaries.
Right.
And I don't know whether they were real incendiaries or not, but they made smoke.
Yes.
And just run a bit where the picture house is, you know, the wall that's out of the picture house.
Yep.
Well, they just were practicing in there. The other thing I remember is, I don't know whether you've heard the chaff, which was a silver foil that the we actually dropped it first in Germany.
Just for the radar.
It was to reflect the radar.
Right.
And it works out that the length of the silver strip was a wavelength in radio frequency, right? So that actually reflected the signals, right? And the Germans must have come caught on to this, because I can remember going out into Argyle Street, looking out the window, and this stuff was lying there in the morning. So it must have fallen on the village. My brother-in-law, he remembers it as well in this area. I don't think it would be a British plane, because what was the sense of a British dropping it here? And I doubt very much if it had blown over for Germany.
Right.
So I can only assume it was Germans that dropped it. The other thing I remember is as a wee boy, in bed, my mother and father and my sister, and the Clydebank Blitz. And the drone of the German planes was a different tone, and you could hear them going across, and I was absolutely terrified under the blankets.
Yes.
We didn't go to the, didn't think we'd need to go to an air raid shelter.
And was there a complete blackout in the village when these air raids took place?
There was a blackout period every night.
I think that must be hard to imagine for folks now in the village, seeing so much light in the village. How
every single house had to have a light tight window, but there was no light seen. And the wardens went round and knocked on the window if they saw any light and told my father actually made shutters, light shutters, and he put them into the window. And then he'd wee turn buttons that held it in place rather than a blind. So that made it light tight. So these went under the bed, come out, and they were ideal actually, because they were lightweight.
See, you talked about you mentioned the cinema there. Did you find out about how the war was going through the newspapers, or was it through going to the cinema? Or
well, you heard it on the radio. We had an old radio. I actually was sitting the other night there looking at my grandchildren with our mobile phones on the internet, looking at things. And it put my mind right back to when I was a boy. I used to go down the street to Burns. You know where Burns
was?
Well, when you turn the corner where the bus stop is, there was a shop there. There was a butcher shop, which was Burns, and right next to it was electrical, kind of garage, electrical things. They sold bits for cars and things like that. But when you were in there, there was a whole dose of batteries getting charged. Now, these batteries were accumulators, and they were about four inches. If you look down on the top of them, they were about 4 inches square and about maybe 6, 7 or 8 inches high, with a handle on them. Now, I had to take them down, get one charged up, and bring back the other one.
Right.
And they lit up the valves in the old receivers. And they also had a grid bias battery and a big battery in this accumulator. Because the accumulator had to be big because of the power that was going through the valves. The light, just like a lamp. Anyhow, I was just thinking back to the old-fashioned radio, and this radio had been made for us, and it was a conical speaker made out of cardboard, varnished cardboard. And we used to listen to Lord Howe on it, which was from Germany.
Yes.
So that was one thing I remember about the war. But you're asking a question about how we knew. Well, we knew about it in the newspapers, and also on the newsreels and the picture house, the Rex picture house. They used to occasionally have sort of concerts on there for the troops. And some of the troops that had been wounded or had tuberculosis, they were up in Stonehouse, and they would walk down through Stonehouse to go to the picture house. And it was always something different every night. It wasn't like you run it for a week, So it was always a change. Don't say it was good every night, but it was good pictures. The other thing I remember about the wartime was big concrete barrels of concrete, made out of concrete, And they were about 4 feet high, and about 3 feet across. And they were sitting at various points in the town. For instance, at Olympic Bridge, sat on the left-hand side there.
In fact, there's still some in the Avon today.
Is there?
Yes.
Well, they were supposed to be for if the Germans were attacking, that they'd be rolled out to, right. to block the road. Uh-huh. That was something. The other thing I remember is collecting papers,
right.
newspapers,
uh-huh.
and you could get a wee badge for it.
Right.
Now, I think the academy, Larkhall uh-huh. Academy, and the junior secondaries
right.
had a different kind of badge, but you could be a general or a field marshal
right.
with a badge uh-huh. that you collected.
What were the papers for?
War effort,
uh-huh.
and that, and aluminium.
Uh-huh.
Aluminium,
right.
sort of pots and pans and things.
Right. Yeah.
And you collected rose hips for... What I don't remember is where the rose hips went. I think they actually went to the school.
Right.
And then somebody collected them for the school.
Was this
but
to
the
make
kids,
jam or...?
No, it was to make rose hip syrup,
right.
which was high in vitamin E,
right.
C. Right? Right. That was quite a common thing, the rose hips.
Uh-huh. I believe raspberries was quite common as well, apparently, for it was to help women in childbirth. I was reading recently.
I don't remember
that.
That
was common.
The other thing was going up to what was the food office. It's the registrar's.
Right. Uh-huh.
And you got wee bottles of concentrated orange for
right.
the kids. You know?
Uh-huh.
So my mother used to go up with me when I was walking up with her, and I can remember when you went in, every mother got this wee bottle of
uh-huh.
Concentrated orange. And cheese, you got a cheese ration.
Right.
And you also got sweets.
Uh-huh.
Now, there was a sweet shop just when you come out of the, heading back down towards the cross.
Okay.
It was only about three houses down on the right-hand side. And I think her name was McDowell, from
right.
memory.
Uh-huh.
And I always wondered how that woman, it was a woman,
uh-huh.
that ran it, how she managed to make a profit, because
uh-huh.
there was hardly any sweeties to be
sold.
You could get in there and maybe about half a dozen bottles of sweeties.
Uh-huh.
They were all barley sugar
uh-huh.
Type
right.
sweets.
Uh-huh.
So you were rationed, and you get your ration book, and they tore out the wee ticket
right.
for the ration book. For
so
the sweets.
What are the shops there, remember, in the village at that time?
Hastens.
Is that Ironmongers?
Ironmongers.
Right.
In the corner of Miller Street and Prongate.
Uh-huh.
Right on the corner. I remember them. It was three sisters. In fact, there was one of them in a bungalow in Miller Street.
That's right.
Still there.
I was Mrs. Hastings' elder. She died a couple of years ago,
did
actually.
She?
Just,
right. Well, I met her
uh-huh.
and she remembered me.
Uh-huh.
And when you walked into the shop, it sort of went down. It was below the floor.
Uh-huh. Right.
When you walked
right.
off the pavement, you sat and went down, and it had the Ironmongers.
Uh-huh.
Sold everything.
Right.
And then the one further down on that side was Finlay the Bakers.
Right.
And I palled about with the two grandsons,
uh-huh.
Gordon and Jim Symington.
Uh-huh.
Both of them are passed away now, unfortunately. But I palled about with them. And then there was Willie, the news agent. Willie had one leg. Hunter,
okay.
Willie Hunter.
Right.
As you come down past the post office.
Okay.
Right next to what was the public hall.
Right.
On the cross side of the public
uh-huh.
hall. No, on the picture side of the public hall was Willie Hunter.
Right.
And Willie had one leg. I wonder if it was
uh-huh.
if it was First World War. I'm not
right.
so sure, but he hopped about in that shop without any bothering papers. And I was a paper boy
right.
for a while. And I used to get the papers from the railway station
uh-huh.
onto the bike and hammered down, halfway down Carnation Street, to a shop down there called Wiseman's.
Right.
And then went round with the papers.
Uh-huh.
I also was a grocery boy in Mackenzie's.
Oh, yes.
Mackenzie's was next. I know that it's in the Heritage, that's
uh-huh.
what it's done. Next to the post office,
uh-huh.
where the bank is now.
Right.
There was a pen close through there.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I was a boy in there, one of the jobs I had was to take cheese.
Right.
And a cheese came at about 2 feet, circular 2 feet, by about 9 inches high.
Uh-huh.
And it was covered in muslin.
Right.
So you put it on a table and you had to take this muslin off. It was
right.
like a mummy, right?
Uh-huh.
You took this off. And then I had to scrape it all.
Right.
Now, I went to the school after that, and I was really, really smelly. And quite often there were a few comments like, who's smelly, you know? And it was the cheese, the smell of the cheese. Right. The other thing I did, the farmers, there wasn't so many, there wasn't frozen chicken or anything like that. The farmers used to hand in chickens or hens to the Mackenzies, and so they hung them up in the back shop. And one of my jobs was to pluck the hens, So I'd be able to pluck it, and it was covered in wee mites. And you don't know it. John, I went to school, and I felt as if I was crawling.
Well, I'd been used to that. I'm allergic to feathers.
It was a whale. I plucked that. The other thing is, one of your heritage chaps, I think his name's Friel, stays in the last house in Locker Street. Well, one particular day I remember in Mackenzie's, it was thunder and lightning.
Right.
And the woman got a phone, there was a woman in there, and she phoned up and asked if she could get two loaves urgently down to see. It was crusty loaves. And you didn't have wrapping on them, right? They just came, and you just stuck them in your, well, I wrapped them in a wee bit of paper, away down. And I put a bag, canvas bag in my head, and I hammered away down on the bike, right down that rails. And I got up, there's a drive up, got up. I was out of breath. Knocked on the door, walked in, put them in the kitchen, did the, one of them go roll off, and I said, so I'll go way up and get a new one for you. It's all right, son, she says. It's only for the dog. John, I was absolutely, I can remember that, I was saturated. And I'm driving back up, and said, a dog, you know, and I can remember that. some of the, I do remember Kit Small. I thought Kit school. Was a, in the school. Kit was a great teacher. And I was always interested in radio. You know how my ham radio operator, right? And they asked me to go into the school and change the stations because we listened to Children's Hour and things like that and educational programs that were on the radio. So I had to, one of my jobs in the school was to go down and change. And they were actually fed through to each a speaker in each classroom. So if you were in Kits, you put it through to Kits. So that was one of my jobs in the school. The other thing was to go in and help the Johnny to shovel the coal into the boiler. Then you were a wee bit dirty when you come back out. And there was evening classes in there. I think the man's name was Linus. And he was a woodwork teacher. And when he was in Greenside,
was this for children or was this for adults?
Well, it was for children, right? And he was a woodwork teacher in Greenside. And the only heating was a coal fire. And if it was freezing cold outside, when you came in, sure enough, he was standing over the coal fire teaching, right?
Yeah.
So he was nice and warm, but the rest of the class was frozen. Right. And I can remember that before we could use the tools in the woodwork class, he had his own doing this, you know, heating their hands up. And that was one thing I remember about Greenside was the cold, was absolutely freezing, and the coal fire. Now, the previous classes, all wigging away back, it must have been the same. No central heating. The kids complain now about the if it's a wee bit cold. Well, we're frozen.
Yeah, quite a change. Well, what's your kind of early memories sporting activities or just kind of recreational events in the village?
I wasn't very sporty, John, but I did on occasions go to see the Violet. The Violet.
Where did they play at that time?
They played in just behind Wilson's
Shop,
Lock Park. I couldn't remember the name of it. And I went to see the trotting. Because there was trotting went round about. It was a kind of cowboy set up. The toilets were a metal building at the side of the fields. I went to see them, and they were a good team at the time. And occasionally I went to Blantyre with my father and some of his pals, although he didn't keep all that well, but I can remember a couple of times I went to the football and got up to Lismahago, the juniors, and I think Stonehouse was in the final, if I remember right, a junior. Do you know that?
It's certainly they got to the Junior Cup final in I think 78.
Was it?
But they done
Ben
well.
Barber,
they done well in some of the leagues and the league cups around about. Certainly the.
I remember. I can remember playing in there. By the way, that big hangar that Wilton put up, I was in the building of that along with Chutney McGee.
Uh-huh.
I remember Chutney McGee.
Uh-huh. I remember you mentioning
the
name.
Well, the two of us built that big hangar. I was also on the building of the big house at Greenside for George Wilson. You know the big one with it?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I think Sandy Selkirk went into it for a while.
So when you left school, did you start with Wilson?
Started with Wilson. Right. I started with Wilson as a bricklayer, and I left the building trade and when I was in East Kilbride and went into electronics for a wee while. Then I came out of electronics and 1964 went in the architects department, which they looked after the maintenance of schools, you know, the management of the properties. And retired when I was 61. Sports, as far as I was concerned, I only followed Violet for a wee while. I was never really interested. I was more interested in amateur radio, which to me was a great hobby.
So were you able to, how far were you able to keep in touch with folks? And
all over the world. Falkland
quite
Islands.
Incredible at that time.
I was
considering now we expect to be able to connect within seconds.
That's right. Well, you had a wee wire aerial out the back garden.
Right.
And I used to talk to America and the Falkland Islands and places like that. But I was mainly interested in Morse, as I'm still doing Morse. Still doing that as a mode of communications. Because I enjoy Morse. But I've met a lot of interesting people.
So your time with Wilson's then, they must have been a fairly big company at the time.
Wilson, well, they actually were a good firm to work with. And when I came out of the army, I was injured in the army. And I was hanging about and I met George Wilson and he says, "You're not working." I says, "No," I says, "I've been injured." And I says, "I've just had the operation up in Stonehouse." And he says, "Just you come and go around on Monday and I'll get you a wee light job." And I thought the world of that, that he could do a thing like that. That's the kind of man he was. He was very good. Anyhow, I started as a bricklayer. A lot of there was a big, big push for houses after the war. So in 1950 I started, in East Kilbride, the new town. When there was any work needing done in Stonehouse, I actually was called off from the housing schemes and to come back to work with an old bricklayer called Johnny Kelly. And he was a sort of bricklayer that was in Stonehouse, doing wee jobs. But if there was, if he needed help, I came out and worked with him, which I thought was great because I did a lot of work in Stonehouse.
So what developments was on Stonehouse that Wilson's was involved in at your time?
There wasn't any developments. It was mainly repairs. I mean, I was in the building of the they did work for the co-op up at Ashgill Cross. There's a shop there. It used to be the co-op. It was an extension at the back. I was in the building of that. And they went up on London Street, the opposite the dentist's. There's a building there, it sits away back where the bus stop is. It was in the building of that. But I did a lot of things like building chimneys. The chimney that was on the top of Wilson's shop, just as you came to the front entrance, there was a big chimney on it. It's all demolished there, isn't it? Well, I was in the building of that. And I just had to build it, but it was lined with brick. And when I put the fire on, the thing cracked with top to bottom. I don't know who suggested it, just about that. It cracked. So they put a banded it with steel. So it was that held it in place. Talking about that, when we were building the old house, or the new house for Wilson's house on Greenside, there was a church in there at one time, as you know. When we were, just before we started to build it, the boiler house had not been removed.
Uh-huh.
Neither had the boiler
uh-huh.
been removed. So the boiler was still under the ground.
Right.
So I don't know whether you knew Willie Whitelaw. He was an engineer with Willis, and he came up and put up big shear legs
uh-huh.
with block and tackle
right.
and put it around the boiler and uh-huh. pulling it up, right?
Yes.
And we're standing uh-huh. beside. The next thing I heard was this, shh.
Uh-huh.
And then I heard all the women in Green Street shouting, uh-huh. Have you lost your gas? The gas was still connected to the boiler. And we beat it up and brought it up with block and tackle.
Well, yeah. I don't know if you know, Tom, but I met Willie in his later years, and one of the things he showed me, in fact, the heritage group's now got it in the centre, is it's a top stone off the spire of the Hamilton Memorial Church.
Is that right?
So we've still got it, and we've got a photograph of a couple of gentlemen actually up the spire bringing the top stone down.
Don't know. I wasn't in the demolition of the church,
right.
but it was uh-huh. only the, I don't know who took it down. I think uh-huh. it was demolition contractors. Uh-huh. But I do remember the boiler coming out, and it was still connected. So Willie went across uh-huh. to the workshop, and he got a bit of wood, and he sharpened it.
Right.
And he put his hanky over his right. and went in the hole and stuffed it in the pipe. So you live dangerously then, I can tell you.
I think health and safety would have a thing or two to say nowadays.
The other thing I did... Uh-huh. in the old workshop, uh-huh. which is the other side of Greenside.
Uh-huh.
My father used to tell me that as a boy, he worked with Wilson
uh-huh.
when he was 14. And in the morning, before the men came in,
uh-huh.
he used to go over to the workshop
uh-huh.
and he would start this gas engine,
right.
which was down below ground level.
Uh-huh.
Now, I did a bit of work over there. There was a wee house next to it, and
right.
I turned it into an office and things like that, and extended the workshop. But they wanted to get this, found this old engine, and,
right.
and I came back to my father, and he says, uh-huh. that's the one I used to start, right?
Right.
Now he must have been 1914, uh-huh. when he, so this gas was under big battens.
Uh-huh.
So we took that out, but that was a historical item, you know, uh-huh. going way
yeah.
back.
Yep.
Well, if my father was operating in 14, it would probably be older than that.
Yeah.
But that was, actually... had a gas engine operating the belts in the
because
uh-huh. that was the original Wilson's workshop.
Of course.
And my father worked with the old original George Wilson.
Yes.
So it's his grandfather.
Yes.
Right. Tom had the house up at Avon
uh-huh.
Hoch.
Uh-huh.
Right. But his father before him,
uh-huh.
and he was the undertaker.
Uh-huh.
And my father used to go through the town with what they called the stretching board, or
right.
the stretching board, as they say, right. And that they laid out the dead on uh-huh. this stretching board to go to the size of the
right.
coffin and everything. So when he was going through the town as an apprentice, they used to shout to my father, "Who's deed the day, Bob?" Right.
Uh-huh.
So there's another wee bit of history, and it was Wilson that was the undertaker.
Uh-huh. Right. It seems to be folk could turn their hands to a lot of different trades at that time.
You mentioned to me that you had found the air raid shelter. In
yes.
Greenside. Well, I used to play in it, and it was under the ground.
Yes.
It was opposite Gallow and McLeod's mill, or
yes.
what was the original old
I
church.
I believe it's still there.
Oh, it'll
still
be
there.
And it was carpeted,
uh-huh.
and you went down into it, and Stuart Wilson and Tom Wilson and myself,
uh-huh.
Gordon Simon, Jim Simon, we all used to play in that
right.
and, as boys,
uh-huh.
and it was a great place to play because there was carpets and everything
uh-huh.
in it, you know.
Yeah.
And so it had been there for a wee while, so it's still there.
Right.
It goes back to the early days of
yeah.
the war.
So what's your some of your memories of some of the organisations that were there when you were younger?
The Scouts.
Scouts.
I mean, I was in the Scouts.
Uh-huh.
And the Scoutmaster at that time was Ricky. He was the Congregational Minister.
Right.
I can never remember his name, but he died a young man.
Uh-huh.
And he died in Stonehouse.
Right.
You know, you don't know his name.
No,
he was a young man,
uh-huh.
and he was dying. He knew he
uh-huh.
was dying, but he kept on with the Scouts.
And was the Scout Hall there at the time?
Scout Hall was there, yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It was. I remember the Scout Hall. I wasn't in it that long, John, but I was in the Scouts, and the Symingtons were in it
right.
as well.
Uh-huh.
There was a chap there. I think his name was Thompson or something like that. He was one of the leading lights in the Scouts, an elderly man.
Uh-huh.
I think his name was Thompson. The other place we used to play was opposite there, in the old railway line.
Right.
And I can remember a building in there, and I think it was Army Cadets, a cadet hall.
Is this where the railway station was, next to the where the coal house was, or is it?
When you turned, I think the last house in Laurie Street was Mackie's.
Okay.
And then you turned up to get into the station.
Right, okay.
And it was over on the right-hand side against the embankment.
Right, okay.
And then there was wee houses sat at the side of the bridge, facing in towards Green Street.
Okay. Right?
You know, yeah. The other wee bit of Green Street. Well, these old houses were derelict, and right. we played in there, and we played in the back. And I recall, during the war, troops sitting right down that railway, that road up to the railway station. They had, don't know whether they'd been disembarked there or what, but they sat there. We were talking to them. They were all sitting on the side of it. Just as you turn into Mackie's house, they were all sitting on the grass bank all the way up, right up to the, right. And up at the top was the sidings.
Okay.
So yeah. They were up right up into there.
Uh-huh.
Don't know who they were. They were English spoken troops.
Uh-huh.
And my father used to have pigeons.
Uh-huh.
And the pigeons, he got special feeding,
right?
During the war, because they got sort of capsule things and messages.
Uh-huh.
If required, right. They would come and get the pigeons, right?
Yes.
If they needed them.
Uh-huh.
So he would get extra feeding because of this. But when I didn't get extra feeding, I used to go to the old mill, and there was a ramp down to the mill. That's Galloway McLeod's.
Down at the Candor?
No, at Greenside.
Oh, at Greenside, yes.
There was a ramp coming out the back, right? And I don't know whether the lorries come up that ramp and were loaded or unloaded, but there was a lot of spillage.
Yeah.
So I used to scrape that up, and it was seeds. And fill a bag and take it. You could take it, because it was just lying all over the road.
Aye.
Nobody would have used it.
No.
Right? So I used to fill that for my father.
Aye, great stuff.
And my grandfather had rabbits, and I collected dandelions. Go walking about collecting dandelions. There was a wee building, Salvation Army Hall. Do you know where that was?
I think I might have lived in it actually at one time. Kirk Street.
That was just
at the corner, just behind where the old ship is.
There was a if I remember, it was an outside.
Mrs. Burns is in the house just at the corner there.
I think it was the ground floor of the Salvation Army.
Right.
And there was a wee woman stayed in the first house there, and it was Jim Simonton's auntie. Tib.
Right.
Tib was her name. Uh-huh. She's just a wee woman. Remember her. And then the Golders. See the Golders that had
the
Moira
cross
Hamilton.
Case.
Moira, I don't know what her name is. She was a Moira Hamilton when I was there. She lost her son in that accident in Galloway McLeod's.
Oh, yes, yes. Brown.
Moira Brown.
Yes, we went to school with Peter.
Moira Brown's aunt lived in there as well. She was a Golder.
Right.
So they were two houses.
Uh-huh.
And then there was a close through with a big door in it. And that's where they kept the van for the bakers and Finlays.
Okay.
Right? And there was a yard that ran along the back of the Hastings.
Uh-huh.
Hastings yard and the Finlay, the baker's yard were together.
Right, fantastic.
Where that bungalow you were talking about, over the back of that was that air raid shelter, but a certain bit of it stopped, and it was a yard. It went right down.
Right.
And there was an old store and everything. There was a lot of old buildings out the back there.
Yeah. Well, we've talked now for nearly 40 minutes, Tom, and I think we're probably coming to the end of the tape here. So, just before we finish up, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about that folk would find interesting in relation to how things have changed over the years, or maybe some of your fondest memories, or what have you enjoyed about living in Stonehouse in the early years?
What I miss is going down the street and people knew you.
Yes.
Right? Lark Hill is not like that. Uh-huh. You just walk past people, unless you know them, of course, but over the years. But Stonehouse had that bit of more friendship when I was there. But when I got there now, I don't know people. Uh-huh. You know, it's totally different. And I keep looking for people that I know. But I think there was that wee bit more a sort of village community and knowing people I mean, I knew all the people in the Congregational Church, and I don't remember much else. You once said to me that the oldest weaving shop was in Cometan Street. But I still remember going to the first house in Green Street.
Was that the Browns, possibly?
And it was two men.
I think the last weaving shop, or the last weaving loom, certainly was in Green Street. I think I might have a photograph.
No, are you talking about further down? No, this was the first house.
Right, okay.
And my father told me to go round. And it was to get lead off the loom.
Oh, right.
It was it was a thing to do with the pigeons, to be landed board, to get a wee lead.
Okay.
And I went round to these, and they weren't using the loom, the jacket loom, but it was, I remember, you know, seeing it.
Uh-huh.
And, but I always thought it was that these two old men at you, that the last working loom in Stonehouse.
Yes, I mean, certainly the last working loom was Robert and James Hamilton for Cometan Street at number 66.
Unless I was mistaken, I'd gone to Cometan Street.
But certainly,
I do
know that there was other looms which were in the village after they stopped working. But from my understanding, they were the last two to be physically working as a business. But there may have been people doing it recreationally, possibly, after that.
I remember that, but I always said to myself, I'm certain I was Green Street.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember going. You were talking about the blackout, and I meant to say to you, everything was jet black.
Uh-huh.
And I had to take my grandmother, and I thought this was great. I got a torch, and I had to shine the torch down so that my grandmother didn't trip on the curbs.
Right.
And she walked from Argyle Street right down Miller Street, past Green Side, up through the wee lane at the side of the pub, and into Dew Street. And that was my job, to shine the torch right through it as a wee boy. You wouldn't do that now.
Uh-huh.
And then come back with the torch.
Yes.
I thought this was great, but there wasn't a light. And there was a man in Stonehouse, eventually we got the lights back on, and it was gas lights, and he was the gas.
Was that John Haddo? Bruce? No, Haddo.
I think his name was Haddo.
Uh-huh. Right.
Latterly.
Uh-huh.
Haddo.
Yeah, I do know there was a Haddo. I've only heard the name, but I know of Johnny Bruce. He was also a lamplighter, but the name Haddo rings a bell as well.
I'm sure it was Haddo. Uh-huh. And he lit the lamps were only 9 feet high or something like
There's
that.
Still one or two in the village yet.
Is there?
Yeah.
We actually had an old one in the garden, and it was used as a pole for the clothes poles.
Uh-huh.
That's about all I remember, really.
Yeah. Well, I think that's fantastic, Tom, and we've got some great memories there. And I'm sure, Tom, you're somebody I could talk to all night, and I'm sure we could probably maybe even arrange to have another night sometime. We can get some more memories from you, but.
It's also in the website.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of memories in the website.
Through the Sorby website. Uh-huh. Maybe just before we finish, Tom, you maybe just like to mention the fact, you know, that you've got that connection to the Sorby clan and their association with Stonehouse.
I don't know how long you've got left in your tape. Well, I was always interested, and I started to follow up, and I found it was a village called Sorby. And I went down there and saw the historian. I'd never heard of anybody be called Sorby before. And I did a wee bit of research, and I published it in one of the local papers, and I got half a page. And I forgot all about it until I got onto the computer, and my son-in-law told me that there was two men looking for information on Sorbys. So I emailed them, and they came up to see me, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a con. It's going to be money for your family tree. But I couldn't have been more wrong.
Mm-hmm.
and the two men come up, one of them being Andy Potts and the other one's a chap Robertson. In the living room here, I suggested that I advertise in the paper, and once I started to get information collected, I scanned it and sent it down to him. We had enough for a website. From there, it blossomed to people all over the world coming back to us and could you give me my family tree. We can now go way back to 1600s in Stonehouse, the Sorbys, and there was two brothers. And from there's thousands of people all over the world. Sorby is obviously a name connected to Stonehouse. Yes. Prior to that, we think we were chased out of Wigton with King James VI, who was the wisest fool in Christendom. The name Sorby means Sir Habitation. It's actually a Norse name. And we have in fact found Sorbys in Sweden. And we've never had a connection with them. We've also found them in Argentina. Believe it or not, Argentina and all over the world. There was one, if you've got enough tape left, there was one chap came from Australia. His grandfather was the goalkeeper of Violet, Alexander Sorby. And his grandmother came from Glasford. She wanted to be buried in Glasford Cemetery, but it was too far away. So he came over here and stayed in Stonehouse for a wee while. And he told me that I threw her gold ring into the River Avon. So he says, I hope the locals don't come out with their mine detectors. metal detectors. So there you are. That's the Sorby. It's been really fascinating. And from there, I found a lot of information about Stonehouse and from yourself, you know. So the two is help meet each other to the same extent.
Well, right. Thanks very much for that, Tom. I think it's fantastic that Sorby's come from all over the world and come back to Stonehouse. And I think it's a great thing that you remind people of where their origins are. And you know, their connections with the village. And I think, as we said earlier on, I think the most important thing about any village is the people, and it's the people that make the village know the village itself. So I thank you once again, Tom, and I'll sign off with that, and I'll just end the interview. Thanks very much.